Blog Talk Radio.
County 23, how do you be corrected to drive, but you have a fire in a one-story ordinary, looks like it's about 40 by 125. Engle to 273-273. Engle Battalion 18-18 Battalion with a 273-273.
Again to Blog Talk Radio with Engine House Training. I'm Gary Graff, and then I'm also joined tonight with Chief Riley. Chief, how are we doing this evening?
Doing very well. Thanks for having me on.
We appreciate you coming in, and just kind of give everybody a little bit idea. You know, the last time I think myself and Chief Riley were on, we talked a little bit about some things with company expectations and firefighter expectations and how to develop those expectations within your company and within your personnel, and kind of the do's and the don'ts, and kind of just bouncing training thoughts and ideas off of it. Whenever it came up for this topic this evening, Chief Riley had posed a very good topic on tactical proficiency through training, which is kind of a really good second phase off of expectations. So, Chief, you want to elaborate a little bit more kind of on what your thoughts were for tonight on the direction, and then we'll dive off into some conversation here.
Yeah, that sounds good to me. I got to steal a line from Kurt Isaacson. Tactics save lives, and I truly believe that. At the end of the day, if we're going to be successful on the emergency ground, we've got to have a sound foundation in our tactical application. And I'm always wondering, what people are doing to ensure the training program actually produces results on the fire ground. And I think it's an issue that we probably all wrestle with. I mean, certainly anytime we go to a fire down here, we look at it, what did we do, what could we have done better, and we just kind of dive into that. And I'm really kind of curious as to what agencies across the board do to ensure they're doing everything they can on the front end, loading up that tactical proficiency. And, this is a long subject. I mean, I could talk about this for hours and hours and hours. But I think that's the nutshell. And, let's tear it apart a little bit. I'm all in on this one.
Okay, good. So what have you seen as far as some things with, whenever you start in with that and trying to develop that tactical proficiency for your company, what's some of the first things you start at? Kind of what's that initial ground? If you're whether the brand new company officer or company officer looking for some additional guidance or leadership, what's some directions you can give them to kind of get started within that? How do we gain and maintain that proficiency?
Well, if I'm that officer, if I'm new promoted lieutenant on an engine company, or I'm 20-year captain on a truck company, wherever I am, I think the first thing that, I've got to acknowledge is, the performance of the company is my responsibility. I mean, if I'm assigned to an engine company and I've come up through the ranks, I've ridden the nozzle position, I've ridden the control position, let's make the assumption that as a supervisor, you know what the functions of that company are. If you know what the functions of those company is, if you know what the functions of your company are, then write them down. What do I expect this company to be able to do at a kitchen fire? What do I expect this company to be able to do at a townhouse fire? What do I expect this company to be able to do at a commercial fire? Once you write those things down, you've got your training goals. You've got some objectives in front of you. Then you can start crafting your training. One of the things that I'll shoot off on the side and then try to come back and, I don't do all that good a job, so blow the whistle if I get too far off base on this. But, we talk to our officers here about, listen, the ISO expectation is 20 hours of training per month per member. Now, I've got some real mixed feelings about the ISO, and maybe some night we can talk about that as a separate issue after I retire, so you don't come in here and re-rate my department the next day. You know, a little sarcasm, you know, sarcasm there, but I'll just leave it as it is. But if I'm that company officer, if I'm saying, okay, my goal is 20 hours of training per month, and I just focus on the number, what happens during those 20 hours? Do those 20 hours amass and accumulate to the point of proficiency on the fire ground? Or is it a bunch of hours that I'm going to log, I'm going to turn my report into my boss, and he's going to look at it and sign off and send the report up to headquarters, and everybody's happy because my members have gotten near 20 hours of training per month? And that's, you know, that's why I say, as that, you know, first line supervisor, you know, what are you doing to ensure your training equals, not just that your training equals 20 hours per month? That's just one example. There's several agencies in the state that are accredited that or are pursuing accreditation. And I've been a CFO for years. I just got renewed. I'm a peer review guy. I know a lot of people at the commission, and I really believe they do some great stuff. But that's another example. If we're going down the accreditation road, do we get so consumed by the check sheet that we really focus on maintaining tactical proficiency through training? So, you know, that's just another example. And I see these things. I get a chance to travel around. I get a chance to talk to a lot of different firefighters and company officers and fire chiefs in all different states. And I see elements of this whole conversation popping up all over the place. So I don't think any one agency by themselves is trying to deal with these issues. I think it's an industry-wide issue. And I think it's a good thing for those of us who are trainers, supervisors, leaders, executives, whatever title you want to hang on us, it's something that we should be talking about. Go ahead, Greg. Hello. Go ahead. Hello.
Still there? Go ahead.
Yeah, I'm still here. I don't know if that was on my end or not. Sometimes the phones aren't the most reliable.
That was me. All of a sudden, my phone went dead.
Oh, okay. Okay.
Okay.
So
back.
Anyhow, where did you lose me? I mean, I'll pick back up if you didn't get all of that.
You were talking about just making sure that we were training for the proficiency and not necessarily filling in check boxes and to meet the requirements of insurance companies and accreditation.
Yes. Yep. So I think we got all that in. So. I mean, that's just another thing that I look at, you know, and that's just another thing that I think about, you know, how are we making sure, you know, what are those tools that we're using to ensure that, you know, we have that, you know, we generate that proficiency at the end user.
Can you hear me?
And then also,
yep.
And also joining in, Jared Smith. Jared, welcome in.
Yeah, thanks. Chief, I totally agree with that. One thing I would even add to that is that departments that do that, what you're talking about, they do that on the fire ground as well. That translates to actions on the fire ground. So their guidelines, so to speak, or their IAPs, whatever you want to deem it, it turns into a checkbox item. So they're not assigning a writ to do active aggressive writ actions to prevent a mayday. They're just simply filling a box. They're checking a box. They're getting people in place in the front yard to check that box. So I think that mentality in training also translates to your actions on the fire ground. You're not thinking or acting tactically. You're just simply checking a box. You're moving to the next step.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's a crap that, you know, anybody can fall into. You know, you're just going through the numbers. You do number one, number two, number three, number four. And the assumption is and it does go into another issue I talked about. The assumption is if I do number 1, 2, 3, 4, then the entry's going to end the way I want. And I know a lot of guys talk about this, you know, especially, you know, top world. You can't necessarily mix process with results, because we're in a business where we can do everything right and we can still have that wild card that comes in and creates bad results. And I think sometimes what happens is we do a bad process, just like you talked about, when nobody gets hurt. You find a weapon, I can figure out if you say, well, that was a great job. Well, was it really a great job, or was it that we got lucky? And when we start going back and talking about tactics, and truly talking about tactics, truly talking about those things that we should be doing, not just get a bunch of guys standing in the front yard with a pool cash and an SCBA bottle cover that says RIT. They understand, they know through operating guidelines and through good aggressive training and through guidance from command that RIT means you're going to do. You're going to have the standby, you're going to have the tool cache, you're going to soften the building, you're going to stay actively involved and be at that mode where you're trying to prevent the mayday. And if the mayday does happen, then you can respond with that skill set that's going to give that member in trouble the best chance of survival.
Right.
So I mean, what type of tools do you guys use? I mean, I'll talk about some of the tools that we use here, you know, in Sunrise Beach. But, you know, we got a couple other people on the line that probably got as much experience as I do. I mean, are you guys doing anything in your agency to ensure that there's some, you know, level of tactical proficiency maintained for training?
A lot of what we do is just mainly trying to get out and do as many hands-on things as we can. We did get into a little bit of a rut for a little while. One of the things that got us out of it was trying to convey a lot of information through video and trying to do here's an example of a skill, and then with the original intent of doing a review of making sure that we're staying proficient with our skills. So here's a video on how to do it, but what we were finding was guys weren't going out practicing, then they were just sitting there constantly watching video, thinking that the repetition
right.
of the video was going to give them the proficiency of what they need to do that. And then we found that was actually, we actually improved some of our skill proficiency by taking the time to do the instruction of the drill ground, of going outside, making them actually stand there, listen to them, and kind of get away from that skill aspect. Because that's what it kind of comes to, like Jared said, it comes more of a checkbox degree. We've watched the video, so hey, we're good on this. What's the next one? And they were wanting more and more videos and less and less on. So we kind of had to revamp our program. And luckily, we caught it before it became too big of a problem, so it didn't take much recovery, but it was definitely a valuable lesson to learn. And, you know, that's what we were finding, and even with some of that, with people are more prone to sitting there and watching on their phone, they can watch on this, watching on that. We're in the digital age, and that was starting to affect our skills. How can we solve this problem? How can we get better? Well, sometimes it works and sometimes it doesn't. And sometimes it's a good plan, but you just got to kind of fine tune it. And that sounds to me, you know, like what you guys are doing in your organization. Yeah, it's definitely a reevaluation. Yeah, I'm not sure what your mic or phone you're on, but you're very difficult to hear.
Oh, okay. Hang on a second.
Okay. Jared, do you have anything else to add along with that?
Is that any better?
Yeah, that's much better.
Oh, okay. I changed some stuff around. Maybe that'll work out for you.
Yeah, much better.
Okay, great. Great. So, you know, one of the things we do down here, I mean, I'll throw this out as an idea that, you know, guys can use or not. Our assistant chief of operations, our previous one, Jeremy Kreiner, is now the fire chief in Siloam Springs. But when he was up here, he would send out objectives, practical objectives every quarter. And what we called it was the minimum company standards. And there were tasks identified in what we consider five crucial areas: SCBA, ladders, rescue, hose advancement, and firefighter rescue. And each one of those categories had like three training objectives. And he sent it out to the company officers, and the company officers were responsible to develop and deliver the training based on the objectives. And at the end of the quarter, there was a check sheet that the officers had to sign off saying that they conducted this training, and they'd put the hours in and they'd send it in up to headquarters. So what we try to do is we try to share some of that responsibility. We want company officers out there delivering the hands-on training, but we felt that if we gave them some topics and we gave them some terminal objectives, it would be easier for them to try to plan the course to get to proficiency instead of just going out there and saying, okay, look, officer, you're in charge of proficiency in your company, and us walk away from it. We got better things to do up at headquarters. You know, we really kind of felt like it was important for us to share that responsibility and empower the supervisors with some tools to get it done. And we found that, you know, once again, we had to tweak the program some. But, you know, Chief Kreiner, like I said, left. He's the fire chief in Siloam Springs now. And we're still using that program that he developed. And, you know, we've been pretty happy with it.
Well, I think you accomplished a couple of things with that, too. You know, with the department, with a training chief or somebody in that position, offering up the objectives and what you need to train on, but then coupling that with enabling your company officers to develop and deliver. You're creating buy-in. At the same time, you're creating continuity of performance between the crews and the shifts.
And I think there's an element of accountability, too, because they've got to report the hours and they've got to report objective match. And we know that by the end of that quarter, they got to turn that quarter in. And, we expect officers to sign on. I mean, every member's got to see it. And the officers got to sign off on it saying, you know, we did this training. So, you know, there's buy-in, there's, you know, a team of focus, and there's also some accountability, because I think that's important. You know, when, you know, we're a small organization, and in all honesty, I can make the rounds to both firehouses every day. I can reach out and touch everybody on this workforce on a regular basis. But when you start getting into bigger organizations, I think it's harder to ensure that, you know, accountability and compliance. And I think that there is some value in tying accountability and compliance in, and letting the officers know. I mean, you know, look, you're just not the highest paid guy on the rig and the dude that gets to talk on the radio. With your position comes responsibility, and if you're going to be responsible, you got to be accountable. And I would encourage people at the chief officer level who are thinking about these type of things, you know, you got to go back to ensuring that everybody's accountable. I mean, me as the chief, I got to be accountable for everything. But there's a lot of other officers in this organization. If the organization's going to be true, you know, what I call robust, you know, that strong, cohesive team that's moving in the same direction, then everybody's got to be accountable. When the firefighters see their officers accountable, you know, it sends a message to the firefighters, too, that, you know, hey, the officer's responsible for you, but you are also responsible for yourself. And that's a whole other conversation maybe for another night that, you know, we can talk about instilling these mindsets throughout the ranks that are going to allow us to be, you know, what I call that robust organization.
Yeah, and even with that, with some of the, like you were saying, with the accountability and allowing the officers to kind of that buy-in and different things and help with that, you know, it's kind of interesting with listening they were trying to make is that you don't find good employees, make good employees. You know, you can find somebody that's a brand new person off of the street as long as you take them and nurture them and train them and educate them and give them the guidance that they need and make them a good employee. But if you're not willing to be a good boss and leader to that individual, then first off, they're not going to want to come work for you. But if you have those other traits to train them in the areas where they need that assistance, then you can make them a good employee. So I thought that was real interesting and kind of fell right along the lines of some of the things that we're seeing nowadays. It's people pointed in the right direction. How do we pass along that message, get them out there, practice their skills and train and educate the company officer to keep their crew going? Don't be looking for the good employee. Go out there and concentrate on making them.
Yeah. I think, something that I always like to do, especially when I drive around, I always like to, figure out who the senior people are in the room, and kind of get a feel for them, talk to them, a little bit. I use this example a lot, because I come from the Northeast, and I've got friends in Philadelphia, and I got friends in New York City, and I got friends in Baltimore. And, I'm always interested, in talking to that person who's been a firefighter for 33 years, squad 72 in Philadelphia. I mean, the guy hasn't promoted up. He's just a fireman. He's in a busy company. He's great at what he does. And it's always interesting to ask that person, how did you keep your focus? How are you sharp 33 years into the job in a busy company where, you could have easily gotten worn down. You could easily just say, I've been around for a long time, kind of picking their brains. And, those are great conversations to have. I mean, I encourage everybody, start reaching out, man. Put people in your network, sit down and just talk with people, and ideas will come out. And, some of the ideas that I developed as a company officer for specific drills that I did, they weren't my creation. They were from people that I know in other organizations. Say, we go to these garden department fires all the time, man. We got these huge hose stretches that we have to do, and this is the way we do them. And it's like, I never thought about that. Boy, that works great. Come back and incorporate that in a drill for my company, and before you know it, it starts spreading through my organization, and all of a sudden, that was the standard in our organization for garden department and townhouse fires, because we're talking about tactics and we're keeping a focus. One of the focuses in our training program is on tactics, being able to deliver that service at the company level. So that's just another thing that I throw out there, especially for officers that are that feel like they're struggling. Well, how do I keep training fresh? How do I keep it relevant? How do I ensure that I'm, making progress, not just checking off boxes on a form? Get out there and you network, man. Talk to other people. I don't think I'm fairly convinced there's not a problem somebody's dealing with that somebody hasn't already looked at. And if you throw out a wide enough net and you talk to enough people, someone's going to give you the advice that's going to help you solve that problem. Same thing with training. Someone's going to have the experience at an incident, or they're going to have the experience on the training ground that can tell you what tactics you need to look at to be successful at a particular incident. If you don't know it yourself, somebody out there does. And I think that most firefighters, if you reach out to them and ask them a question, they'll be more than happy to tell you.
Yeah, one of the things, even with that, is, you were talking about trying to find the thing, training fresh. One thing that I like to do personally is whenever you see something that occurs, whenever you have a good time before you leave that incident, to go over and do a review, whether it be a quick learning tool right there, or something that went wrong with a hose stretch, or something that'd be a difficult placement of a ladder, or hey, there's a window in a unique situation. Go right there before you leave the incident, kind of do a quick, training. Hey, did you guys pay attention to this? Look at it. Nothing else. Instill that thought in your mind so when they're leaving there, they're thinking about that. Hopefully, when they get to the training ground the next time to do ladders, that unusual window or that weird deck or the teak bangle in the backyard or whatever it is that connects them back to them. Kind of throw them into the moment when they're in the moment so that it kind of sticks home a little bit more. And I found that worked for some of our guys, especially some of our newer officers that need that guidance. You know, what do I come up with? You know, it seems like we're always trying to. And I got a newer officer that made a comment the other week that, hey, seems like I'm always training on the same stuff. It's like, well, here, I'll help you keep it fresh. And it's like, you know, training on the same things, but you're doing different times. And just give them different ideas like that to help them along. And it might be the same topic area, but you're expanding your knowledge within that area.
And I think you make a good point when you do it. When you do that speed of management, I mean, it's real. I mean, you can go out there and talk on the training ground over and over and over again. But I think there's that element of, you know, pointing out towards learning about, you know, recency, the most recent thing that happened is the thing that stick with it. It happened on the instant, points back, reinforce that. And I think that's a great tool. And boy, absolutely. I try to do that as much as I can, you know, after the incident. And I think it's a great tool for officers to use it. And I think it just sort of validates the officer, too. You know, if you bring the company together and you go around the table, hey, boy, stand at the back of the grid, you know, you go in, you're the officer, you're the leader. You ask, you know, John, and you ask Joe, and you ask Bob, and then you have your chair.
I think it's a great tool, absolutely.
And we've even tried to even encourage guys that, hey, not everybody can be on every call. So if you have something that's unique to your call, you know, within reason and within, you know, some of our policies, things that we have for those, if you can take a picture of it and share it with everybody. We had one couple of weeks ago that was a house unique stairwell that, you know, one door was blocking the stairwell to come into the back side. And then once you cleared the door, it made a 90 and the seat set of steps, and where they had the incident at, they actually had to get to the top of the steps and make a 180. Extremely difficult stretch back. Well, when the crew got finished, they left their hose there, went to the homeowner, said, hey, do you mind if we take pictures of this? I was like, no, not at all. Why? They explained, well, we want to be able to share this. And they did a really good job. They took a couple of pictures, did a video following the hose line, and then sent it out to everybody. That way everybody could kind of see what they had. And it's not just using that to train your crew, it's to pass that information along so that the next one to get that same situation, maybe a spark in interest, or next time they're on the drill ground, hey, they had that call the other night. Hey, let's see if we can emulate what they had, practice that stretch. Let's see how we can either, if we can make the stretch, or how can we make that stretch more proficient, and then pass that information along. So we've found that using, you know, I talked about it earlier, how that video and that using pictures can be a bad thing, but it can also be a good thing by using real situations and scenarios to be able to express the importance of the content of the training.
Yeah. I mean, I've got to admit that, you know, if I can figure out how to take a couple quick pictures on my phone and connect to Bluetooth to the printer and firehouse, if I can do it, anybody can do it. And you snap one or two pictures, like you just said, and then hang them on, you know, I don't know how many agencies have got, you know, the big roll call board in the engine room. You know, you come in, you write everybody's writing prediction or whatever. It seems to me everybody goes by that board. You snap one or two pictures, come back to the firehouse, print them out, take them to that board. Man, you can get conversations going on between all three to do for a month just because of one or two pictures. And, you know, as long as guys are willing to be professional and, you know, take advantage, I mean, it's a great tool, man. Just throw them on up there. Hey, listen, this is what we saw the other night. This is what we ran into the other night. How would you do it? You know, but sometimes I like to throw stuff out like that and not say anything how I would do it. You know, how would you do it? Because, you know, there could very well be, you know, senior firefighters standing around and look at it and go, oh, yeah, it has a better idea than anybody else in the fire. I think sometimes when you just feel that, how would you do it, it allows people to be honest. You know, or it gives them an opportunity to step up with maybe a new idea. You know, it's a real hard, sometimes I think it's a real hard thing to navigate because, you know, we tend to be very territorial. We tend to, you know, look at your longevity numbers and all those other type of issues. And sometimes it's hard for those newer folks to step up with an idea. But I think that's another important thing in training is when it comes time to training, you know, let's put it all on the table. And you know, let's encourage everybody. Someone in the group's got an idea. And if we can just keep the conversation going, that may be a good thing.
And the other point with that is whenever you're going to share that information, you can pass it out there to everybody. Don't be a little bit thick-skinned because somebody is going to question, well, why did you do it that way? You know, be more proficient if you did it like this or did it like that. And, you know, again, don't take that as a – there's got to be one that's going to be critical on the actions you took. Like I said, you got to be a little bit thick-skinned. Just say, hey, you know what, this worked. We're improving on it. Give us the positive input, but don't be the one looking at all those situations when people trying to provide negative feedback. Don't be the one that looks at it as a negative aspect. Well, they did right. That wrong, or they didn't do it. They're sharing their information to make you better, so encourage them to keep doing it. They are trying to do the right thing, and then it's only going to take so many times that somebody downs them like that, where they're going to be like, well, through this, I ain't going to share this information anymore because every time I do, then I get the negative side of it. So, yeah, it's got to be a little, got to cut those things off before they occur. But
I had a guy that worked for me. He was that guy, you know, every time. And I was standing around, and anybody that's been around me knows that, you know, sometimes I like break all the golden rules in the leadership books. And I finally had enough of this guy. I looked at him and said, you know, you're the guy that if I told you to stay home and I'm going to mail you your paycheck for the next 20 years, you'd bitch about having to walk to the mailbox, wouldn't you? And he just kind of looked at me like, and it was really kind of, you know, it was really kind of funny because everybody else heard it too. And that shut the guy up. I mean, that was the end of him. And, maybe it was kind of a hard approach, but he was that, you know, he was that negative force that always took away from the positive movement. And, you know, when we talk about tactical proficiency, if we're going to maintain tactical proficiency, we've got to understand that there's some guys or some people, some, you know, men and women out there that are just going to be that person. And maybe, you know, you got to shut them down too. Maybe you can't let them, you know, override the good that can come out of sharing a picture and your mistakes with the entire agency. So, you know, every once in a while, you know, I think, you know, I don't care what the books say, you know, the real world tells me every once in a while when those folks, you know, step up, sometimes you got to put your hand in the middle of their chest and push them back.
Yeah. You know, sometimes even with that, you know, sometimes guys are seeking out an honest opinion, and unfortunately they get that person that takes the negativity too far, kind of like you were saying. But that's, especially for a new company officer, something that would, which, again, that can go into a whole different topic area. But, yeah, absolutely. Got to keep, you know, make sure that they stay focused, what information they're looking for, or what it is they're trying to achieve with sharing their information or getting their information out there. Just know that it's going to happen. So with the negativity, just be prepared for it and work past it. I seen somebody had something the other day on a post on Instagram or one of the social media that said, stretch past your haters. And I thought it was pretty good. It was actually a picture of a guy stretching a line. And I was like, yeah, I'm going to have to remember that.
Yeah, I was watching a video, man, and a couple weeks ago, and I forget where I saw it. It was, you know, one of the engine companies, you know, Facebook pages, and the guys were stretching, you know, the guys were stretching a leader line, and they were using a dustbin pack off of it, you know, stretching on the balcony, and they put the video up, you know, hey, listen, this is what we did today. You know? And I mean, that's cool. I mean, that's good. You know, I mean, guys are out of the firehouse, they're out there training. Trying to maintain tactical proficiency, they probably identified you know, a target hazard that they would probably have trouble with if they encountered it, and they're trying to load up on the front end. Well, you know, all the keyboard, you know, you all keyboard commandos are on there. Oh, why didn't you just pull your pre-connect? Oh, you took so long. It's like, and I got on there, and I, you know, I let loose with a couple comments. I mean, you know, why is out there, you know, why is anybody out there kicking guys who are out trying to do stuff? Maybe it's a brand new tactic that they're just in the crawl stage in, and you're sharing it with everybody. Maybe their knowledgeman is a brand new guy out of recruit school who's never done this evolution before, and you're spending some time out in the firehouse walking this guy through this evolution. Maybe it's a dude who transferred to the other side of the city, and he didn't have any of these common balcony-type structures. You know, maybe it's a guy who's just transferring in off of truck company and hasn't worked an engine in a couple of years. You know, don't be so hypercritical with, you know, people who are out there, you know, working hard and, you know, trying to do a good thing. And like I said, how can you knock a company for getting out of the firehouse and pulling line and trying to develop tactics for a specific target hazard? I mean, how can that be a bad thing? You know, they may not be perfect, but, you know, last time I looked, I'm far from being perfect enough. And I really want to meet the perfect fireman. I've been in this business for 44 years. I haven't met him yet. I don't even know if he's out there. So, you know, like you said, don't get discouraged if you're working hard trying to build proficiency, man. You know, the haters hide while the doers do. And I think that's very true.
Yeah, you'll never know what that full potential is of company you're creating yourself or whatever unless you get out and actually practice doing it. Try to emulate it as close as you can to being good. Be expected to respond to, you know, even with that, we get different training drills, different things that we're running to do, you know, that we're doing and running, and you guys will have to do. Do we have to do this? Do we have to wear that? Do we have to, if that's what you're going to do in the real situation, absolutely, because that's what we need to be proficient. You won't know your full potential on, you know, again, I'll go back to the ladder center. You don't know how to throw that ladder unless you're doing it with your full PPE, your FPPA. That's how we're going to do it. So emulate that. Okay, it's hot, so we'll train in half the amount of time, but go out. We're going to do that just like we're going to do it normally. Be prepared for that. You know, some guys have difficulty in adjusting and adapting to that just because they're afraid of saying, well, no, you're going to wear your full gear, and they're afraid of the repercussions. So let's go out and let's do it. Let's do it right. Take some pride and some ownership in what you're doing and do it to your full potential and be prepared for that.
Well, you know, well, I know this for a fact, and I was never part of the regiment, but I know a ton of guys, and I worked with a ton of guys overseas that were part of the regiment. When a battalion in the 75th Ranger Regiment gets ready to deploy downrange, and they go to the line of fire ranges, do their, you know, fire and maneuver drills, they're out there, it's 90-some-odd degrees, and they're wearing their full kit, and they're wearing body armor, and they're, you know, throwing real bullets, you know, at target, and they're shooting and moving. And that's exactly what you said, that, you know, if they're going to be proficient on the battlefield, and I think the 75th Ranger Regiment is one of the most proficient military units in the world on the battlefield, then you got to train in those exact same conditions, and that's what they do. And you know what? There are guys, and I worked with a couple of these dudes who made multiple deployments to Iraq and Afghanistan as part of the Ranger Regiment. Every time they got ready to train up, they went through the same battle break. And I mean, these are guys who have been downrange 2-3-4. This time they're going downrange, they go through the same exact battle drill. And that's why they're proficient. And I think there's a lesson to be learned from that. We want to be proficient on the fire ground. I mean, we may not have a bad guy shooting at us, but we're fighting an enemy that, you know, will be more than happy to do damage to us. So we need to build that proficiency in exactly the environment that we're going to operate in. I mean, I understand the whole crawl, walk, run, aspect of developing a skill. I mean, I get that, and I get that, it may not be the smartest idea to wear full gear in SCBA at 2 o'clock in the afternoon on the training ground when it's 100 degrees out. But, I also understand that sometimes we've got to learn to be comfortable being uncomfortable, because that's the world that we're going to live in. And I think we've got to understand, we've got to realize that even though I've been on the job for 15 years and I've done this task 1,000 times, 1,001 times may be that critical incident where if I execute wrong, someone's going to die. And that means that I just got to maintain that skill. I can't hang my hat on the fact that I've got, 4 stars on my sleeve. That's past history. I mean, what we're getting paid to do in the career service and what the volunteer service is expected to do is be proficient on the next run, not the last 20 that you did. And that means, getting out there, like you said, getting out there working, getting out there training under those exact situations that you're going to have to perform in. When the leaders at the company level and the shift level and the department level are talking about that and they're enforcing that and they're modeling those behaviors, you get agencies that train for tactical proficiency, not just to fill out some, check marks on a sheet or, get a gold star or any of that type of stuff. I think that's one of the important things. If we're going to talk about, training for tactical proficiency, we've got to be doing that.
And, one of the other things, too, that kind of came to mind when we talked about this was, we're talking about different fire ground related to kind of training for those and being proficient in those. But, a lot of things that I've seen comes back to not just those important skills, but also it comes back to work ethic. How does that person handle themselves around the engine house? How do they, are they the person that's always out there checking the truck and cleaning the truck and the one that's always doing the house chores and making sure this is clean and taking out the trash and emptying the dishwasher? It's the same thing. It goes along with the work ethic that's instilled in an individual that prompts that motivation to get out and do those things, be the best at whatever it is that you're doing. It doesn't always have to be stretching a line, you want to be able to do that because most important citizen, the most important person the citizen is relying upon us at that moment. But things that go along with that are even more like the amount of pride that you take in sweeping the floor that goes along with those. If you're going to sweep the floor, do the best job that you can sweeping it. You're going to do that floor with that much pride and dignity. You're going to do the same thing when you get out on the drill ground. You're going to take that much pride and skill what you're doing for those citizens also. So even, my own personal opinion, it comes back to a lot of work ethic.
Oh, yeah. I thought, he was saying, and I only wish that I could remember he said this, so I could give him credit for it. But, it goes along the lines that hard work will always outdo talent when talent doesn't want to work. And, I think it's true. I mean, I draw a lot of parallels to the military. I draw a lot of parallels to the sporting world. I mean, a lot of top performers in professional sports, whatever sport you want to say, a lot of the top performers are not necessarily the most talented. They're the ones who are willing to work harder than everybody else. They're the ones that have that work ethic. And it translates, from the little things to the big things. I mean, you're absolutely right. I mean, I can tell 99 out of 100 times I can walk in a firehouse, I can look around, and within a minute, I can tell if the company is fraud or if it's not. Because if the firehouse isn't maintained, if the bridge isn't maintained, if the stuff isn't squared away, there's not that attention to detail, there's not that work ethic. And I don't care what anybody says, it's you can sweat when the bell is hit. I think Mark Van Alphen is absolutely correct when he says, it's an all-in attitude. I mean, I'm all in from the time I walk through the door until the time I go home. I mean, I can compartmentalize my life and I can focus on my job at hand. My job at hand is being the best that I can be. So
If that means I got to sweep the floor and keep the firehouse clean, that's what I do. If I got to empty the dishwasher, that's what I got to do. And I think it's really important that senior people send that message. I mean, I when I was a battalion chief, I had a lot of things going on, and I couldn't always do all the things that I wanted to, you know, at the company level in the firehouse that I lived in. But I made a point to be the first one up every morning. I always make coffee, and I always empty the dishwasher. I always clean my own car. Now, as a battalion chief, I could have easily not done any of those things, and nobody would have said a word to me. But I just felt, you know, going back to what you said, that work ethic. If I want my folks to work hard, then I've got to show that I'm willing to do it too. I got to show that I'm willing. I'm the highest paid guy in the firehouse, but I'm willing to be the first one up to make sure there's fresh coffee on when the rest of the company wakes up. You know, those little things, I mean, they translate. They translate from the firehouse onto the drill ground. And I think that you make an excellent point. You know, I just hope that my examples, you know, reinforce that for everybody, because I think that you're dead on.
Absolutely. Yeah, that goes, you know, even like the example that you added there with the, as the battalion chief doing the, you know, first one to make the coffee, you know, that's going on, leading by example. I'm going to get up and make the coffee, then just remember that, you know, and then, you know, that also instills not just the work ethic, but then also the leadership. Hey, well, it's not above the battalion chief to get up and make the coffee. You know, a lot of times we hear that, you know, the poke at the newer guy for making the coffee or unloading the dishwasher, but again, it instills that I'm not beside doing the chores that I'm expecting you to do also.
Well, you know, it's that team. I mean, we're all, you know, I think it sends the message too, and, you know, it's just not, you know, topic for another night, but yeah, I mean, it's a good thing to go around. You know, it's about the team. You know, listen, we're all in this together. You know, we're all living in the firehouse together. You know, just because, you know, I'm the chief doesn't mean that I'm the king. You know, I'm still on shift work. So if I'm still on shift work, I'm still part of the team, and I got to do my part to the team. You know, I'm not trying to brag, but I will say that when I transferred to headquarters, when the new battalion chief came to my platoon, those guys said, hey, listen, this is the way this place works. This is the way the shift works. And you know what? That chief said, yeah, I get that. Oh, that's a great idea. And it has, you know, the traditions that we started way back when we were growing in Cherry Hill, and, you know, we first rolled the battalion chiefs out. Some of those traditions, some of the things that I did, some of the things that the other chiefs did, they're still in play, you know, and they're being passed down. And it sends a good message. And I think the other thing, too, you know, and like I said, you know, we're kind of, you know, veering off a little bit, but it does, you know, I can bring this back around. When you're doing that in that leadership position, that gives credibility with people. So when you sit down at the dinner table and you start talking about tactics and strategy, people, you know, sometimes when, you know, some of the older guys that walk around real pompous, like, you know, they, you know, they're the Pope and you ought to kiss my ring because I'm the chief and I've been here for X amount of years. When they start talking, man, guys get turned off. And it's just, you know, that way they handle themselves. But when you have those working, what I call the working bosses, and I'm speaking about this at Firehouse Expo, a little shameless plug for me, but if you're out there at the expo and you want to hear more about this, come in, you know, and listen to me. When you're that working boss and you're showing that, you know, you're part of that team, and you sit down at the dinner table and you want to engage with people about strategy and tactics, they'll listen, you know, because they know that you're one of them. And they'll give you that credibility. They'll say, I know this guy is one of us. I know this guy does his fair share. I know this guy cares about us. But you know what? This guy's been around for a while. He may be able to teach me something. So they'll put their cell phones down, and they'll listen to you talk about strategy and tactics. And they'll listen to you talk about how you put that line up to the third floor of that apartment building fire when you were a captain at 31. And you share that experience, and that's as good a training, talking about maintaining tactical proficiency, as a lot of the other things that we do. And I think it's, you know, keep these things in the back of your mind. You know, how can I do one thing to ensure that I get what I want on that front end? You know, I think that's something, you know, my thoughts, my experience, and what worked well for me.
And, you know, that's another thing, and we talked about, you know, too, with being in the expectations, but it doesn't have to be the expectation from the supervisor to the firefighter. It can even be just a cross ring from firefighter to firefighter, and, you know, pass it on. A lot of times you're doing those things, it becomes amazing. It's very much noticed.
Yeah, I think, you know, I think that, you know, a lot of firefighters, you know, for the most part, you know, the folks that we want to invest in, the folks that we know that, you know, can be the performers, even if they're, you know, the junior guys, they don't want to let down the people they're working with, you know. So there's some, you know, real accountability across the board, too. You know, if we have that senior man on the company who can pass his knowledge on, you know, those younger people are going to want to emulate that. Those younger people, when they see the senior people investing in them, they know that there's somebody in that company that cares about them. And they're going to do everything that they can to make sure they don't let that person down. And, you know, I mean, there's a great way to build tax proficiency. I mean, it's been a long, long time since I've been, you know, since I rode the nozzle seat. And I may know a lot and I may have a lot of experience, but if you want that current, up-to-date, best knowledge you can get, you're probably better off going to a person who's riding the nozzle seat with a black helmet today than you are asking me. I mean, I can certainly teach you a lot, but the real relevancy when it comes to those tasks are from the firefighters who are doing the job. And, you know, if we start as leaders, if we start talking to our senior people like this and get them to develop those relationships with the less junior people on the company, then we're all talking about tactical proficiency. And it gives people who hopefully are the most tactically proficient at the task level the chance to step up and pass their knowledge. So, and it just makes for a stronger team across the board.
Absolutely. Well, Chief, we've been going at it close to an hour. Jared had to drop off. He was actually on the road. He was having a problem with his connection. That's why you all couldn't quit hearing him.
Yep.
But, you know, this, like you said at the beginning, this is a topic that we get to go on and on and on for. And I think, you know, we've got kind of a good start with the conversation. I think it's something that, you know, be a good one to revisit, come back and get a couple more guys involved and more different thoughts and ideas and some of the things that they found work good for direction within their crew or within their organization. And you can have multiple podcasts or a couple of hours of conversation talking about that very thing on building that tactical proficiency within the company. So with that, did you have anything else you wanted to throw out there and discuss this evening?
Yeah, I think we covered a lot of stuff. I totally agree with you. And I think this is a topic that we can come back and revisit a couple times. And I would hope that a lot of people get a chance to listen to this, and then maybe in a couple months we can put it back out there and bring some more people into the conversation. Because, you know, I think we got a couple good ideas here in Sunrise Beach, and I think we're doing a couple good things here in Sunrise Beach, but I'd love to hear what other people are doing, because, as I said, you know, the answers are out there. I mean, there's a lot of folks with a lot of good stuff and a lot of good answers, and I'd love to be able to throw all this stuff on the table so that everybody that tunes in can kind of go through like the menu and they can pick those two or three things that might work well for them.
Absolutely. Well, I appreciate your time tonight, joining in and being a huge part of the conversation. As always, it's been a pleasure. I'm glad it worked into your schedule this evening.
Well, like I said, it's always enjoyable for me, and I hope to be back on here with you guys.
All right. Well, yeah, we'll be in touch, and we'll get something else set up. Have a good rest of your evening, and thank you very much.
You bet. You guys stay well, and I'll stay in touch.
All right. Thanks, Chief. And thank you guys for joining in. And on behalf of Engine House Training, I'm Gary Grett, and we'll catch you next time.
Stay well.